You've got to shoot this bit, Margaret. You've got to shoot it.
So, welcome to episode 22 of the Whiteout Podcast. I'm Dom Killinger. I am publisher of In the Snow magazine. I'm very proud of it. And today, even more proud to be joined by my co-host, Rob Stewart. Rob, how are you?
As always, Dom, I am great. You know, just returned from another ski trip to the Alps, and we're coming towards the end of March. And yeah, spring skiing.
How was it? What was it like?
It was good. Yeah, there's a lot of snow. I was in Tien. Yeah. There is a lot of snow in Tien. Mm-hmm. You know, walls of the stuff.
Wow.
And obviously from 2,000 meters up, there was a large quantity of snow. Unfortunately, the day we arrived, they did have a bit of rain.
Oh, wow.
And up to a higher level. It didn't affect the snow too much on piste, but the off piste wasn't great. The good news is there's colder weather and more snow forecast. And with the amount of snow they've got at the moment, actually, I think April could be a really good month up there. And any resort really that's going to have skiing above 2,000 meters, which a lot of resorts have.
Wow, fantastic.
So yeah, the snow was generally, I'm not making it up. Honestly, there's a lot of snow there. And although conditions were spring-like, so it was a little bit hard and icy in the morning, and it was quite soft and a bit slushy on the lower slopes in the afternoon.
Yeah.
So sort of classic spring skiing conditions, really. But, you know, the quantity of snow, I would say, is more than I've seen at this time of year, above 2,000 meters for quite a while.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was interesting.
Great news. That's really good. So an exciting week for you, that's for sure. That sounds like it's been a pretty cool week while I've been chained to my desk, considering this week's podcast, this amazing podcast this week, where we are talking to the legend that is Dan Egan. So, Rob, to you and me, this guy's a total legend. To the listener, some may know him, some may not. So do you want to give a quick intro to Dan Egan? How are you going to do that? You know, how can you do that intro?
You know what? It's quite easy because he is a legend.
Yeah.
And I've got to know Dan quite well over the last few years. You know, when we were kids, teenagers, and he was in all the Roran Miller movies, he's done more Roran Miller films than any other skier.
Wow.
Right? So he's a proper Roran Miller legend.
Wow.
He traveled the world through the 90s, late 80s, early 90s, traveling the world. You know, the sort of thing that maybe today we take a bit more for granted. But back then, it was pretty crazy stuff to go and ski in places like Turkey, for example, and do some crazy stuff over there with Roran Miller. And, of course, famously skied the Berlin Wall as it was coming down. All crazy stuff like that, which he documents in his book, 30 Years in a White Haze.
Wow.
Which was launched 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And Dan is just one of these infectious characters that when you ski with him, he's so enthusiastic and just that rubs off, you know, He's a ski coach now. He works in Big Sky, Montana as an ambassador and coach. And he's very recently taken a group to Alaska for a heli skiing trip. Kind of like the dream thing to do, right? You're going to go with Dan Egan, you're going to ski powder in Alaska. And that's what I was really interested in speaking to Dan about, because it was our bucket list destination of the week. And then, you know, I thought, who better to talk about that than Dan, who's actually been there many times and knows the place
amazing
so well. And it's just a dream for me to go there. Yeah. I've not being able to do that.
Well, that's a true bucket list destination. That's what it's all about, isn't it? It's something that's on your bucket list, something to do before we pop our clogs. So, wow, yeah, absolutely incredible. I mean, what a fantastic story. He is a legend, and I find him hugely captivating. So hopefully our listeners today will enjoy the interview with the legend that is Dan Egan and his trip to Alaska. Let's have a little listen.
So, hi, Dan. How are you?
Robbie, I'm good, man. I'm really good. It's been a great winter, you know, skied a lot of good snow. And and of course, it's not over yet. There's plenty more to come.
Absolutely. And you're at home right now, a rare visit, I think.
It is. I'm back home here in beautiful New Hampshire, and it's spring is popping up. Spring skiing here in March. It came a little early, but make the best of it. And you know, this time of year, I'm always welcome to see the sun, and we get more of it. The days are getting longer.
Yeah, nice, nice, nice. So today we're talking about Alaska, right? Nice. It's our bucket list destination for this week's podcast. And I know you've just been there, Dan. lucky you. That's all I'm going to say about that. So tell us, what was this? You know, what was this trip all about?
Well, I mean, Alaska really is, you know, the final frontier in the North America. It's the place that a lot of people have heard about. They've seen it in the movies, and it's all of that and more. It's an overwhelming destination to go to from the beauty and from you really the frontier. You know, you go up to Anchorage, and Anchorage is this, you know, North American town, but it's way out there. And you know you're in winter when you get to Anchorage. It's definitely embedded in winter, snow banks and icy roads and wind. And we flew with a Majestic heli-ski. They're 2.5 hours outside of Anchorage, north, directly north, in the Chugach Mountain Range. And, you know, for your European listeners, Rob, you know, I know that if you ski Europe, you appreciate glaciers. Glaciers are part of the culture. You're used to seeing them. And unfortunately, for the last few years, we're used to the conversation of shrinking glaciers. But if you want to see glaciers still alive and kicking and you know, full, the Alaskan glaciers in those mountains are overwhelming. It's what I remember the European glaciers decades ago. The blue ice, the chiracs, the deep, cold snow skiing on those glaciers that you can't duplicate, right? You can't get on that surface anywhere else but a glacier. And to access a glacier by a helicopter, being dropped off with, you know, three of your closest friends and a guide, and you're alone, that's special. No tracks in sight. You're just sitting up there surrounded in beauty. You're surrounded in mountains. And I got to tell you, like, I've skied everywhere and I've skied in Alaska, but every time it's overwhelming. I was skiing down. I had to remind myself to pay attention to skiing because I was distracted
yes.
by the diamonds yeah, right. sparkling in the snow, the backdrops, the glacier. There was just so much to take in. It's a little overwhelming. So it's really, it is idyllic. And of course, we search for that solace in skiing all the time around the world. But heli skiing in Alaska delivers it in a way that I really find indescribable.
And before we get into some of the detail of the destinations and everything, you're talking about the glacier there. And I think most of our listeners probably understand what that means in terms of when you ski on a glacier in the winter in a place like Alaska or indeed in Europe. You know, what the snow conditions are probably like, which is, I'm sure, really, really good. But I just want to clarify that when you ski on a glacier like that, it's not on ice, right, Dan? It's definitely not on ice.
I heard not ice. I mean, look, you're talking about a snowpack that is consistent texture. You know, it's cold winter snow and it's, you know, it's boot to knee deep. It's far from ice. And it's also untracked. You're not crossing tracks. You're not going over old tracks. You're skiing in pristine powder. And the one thing I think is often understood about heli skiing in general, Rob, is heli skiing is not going to ski steeps and crazy. Heli skiing is perfect terrain. Heli skiing, you know, is what you dream about when you step out of that helicopter. I mean, of course, it's a little overwhelming in the terrain itself, but you're in terrain that is ready to be skied. I mean, we had in our group, we had everything from strong intermediates to, you know, world renowned experts, right? Like we had the gamut and abilities and everybody had a ball. It's not about scaring yourself. It's like, you can't believe how good it is. Like, you're just like, gosh, this is what skiing should be, right? Like untracked, nobody cutting me off, perfect powder. It's not sticky. It's not wind crust. You know, it's blowing up in my face like you see in the magazines. Yeah, it's so fun. Like, amazing. Everybody's having a ball.
And so, you know, Alaska is obviously, it's obviously a state of the USA, removed from the rest of them, or most of them. And to us, we look at that and it's like, whoa, that's big. I mean, it's just, it's not, you know, so it's our bucket list destination, but it's also, you know, what is that destination in terms of skiing? Where can you go when you arrive in Anchorage, when you fly into Anchorage? Where is it in Alaska you then go to?
Yeah, no, it's a great question because it's, you know, it's a huge state. And a lot of it's, you know, still really, you know, rural, right? It's the Arctic. And, you know, you have to be prepped to be in a really cold place. It's not like uninhabitable, but it's a cold state, right? And you're in a cold part of the world. It's winter. And when you're flying into Anchorage, it's you realize right away, one, you're seeing mountains and you're seeing no development. There's no development. There's no roads. There's no development. That within itself is a treat, right? Then you get, you know, okay, where are we going to go in Alaska? I mean, the closest ski area is Alyeska, which is very near to Anchorage. And is a big mountain to ski. You know, it's a fun mountain to ski. Okay. It's a dark mountain in that, you know, the days are short, you know, depending on the time of year you go. But Alyeska has a tram and it's a proper ski area. And you'll have a proper big mountain ski experience at Alyeska.
And Alyeska, that starts with an A, doesn't it? A-L.
It does. Yeah.
Alyeska. And that's how far from Anchorage?
No, it just, you know, it's basically Anchorage proper.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And likewise then at this time of year, you know, middle of March, I guess you're going to get a decent day now, right? As we're in the middle of it, you're going to get decent daylight.
You are, you know, daylight savings time, of course, over here. And so we gained an hour and the sun's staying up a little higher. So you get a sense that it's a bit warmer in the sun. And it's a fun place to go hang out and ski. And of course, on your way to Alyeska is the Chugach heli ski operation. And you know, there you can take a day trip if you want to just tiptoe into heli skiing, or you can arrange for a multi-day trip with Chugach heli guides. And you know, that's great skiing there. It is near the coast, so there's weather, right? I mean, when you talk about Alaska, you have to understand that you're dealing with some coastal locations, so you have weather. And helicopters can't fly in weather. Not only storm, but flat light or cloudy days.
Right.
So sometimes people don't understand that, well, it's not snowing, let's fly, but it's flat light, so it's hard. There's no tree lines, right? You're above tree line.
Right.
And you're in the wild. So, but once you get beyond that, it's amazing. So yeah, Alyeska and Chugach are great, well-known destinations, very, very popular. And then you start to expand. Like Valdez is probably what most people think about when they think of heli skiing in Alaska because of the movies. And that's where the first ever extreme contest was held in the early 90s. And Valdez was early to brand itself Alaskan heli skiing, and really the final frontier for powder and big mountain skiing and crazy lines. And, you know, of course, the famed Doug Coombs won the first contest. And from that, you had Shane McConkie and others sort of branding Alaska as this amazing, you know, Shangri-La of powder skiing. And Valdez, of course, unfortunately, is well known for the oil spill, right? So Valdez is famous on a lot of different levels. It's a fishing town, so it's definitely a back in time when you go there. It's an active seaport that's closed down in the winter, and it's run by heli operators. The lodging is in the city, in the town. It's not a city, in the town.
Yeah.
And they fly outside of town. So often there's a shuttle to the helipad, or you fly from the airport. So it's not like it's not like you're in the mountains with your heli outside your lodge in Valdez.
Right.
And Valdez has weather. So it's coastal, it's sea level. It can rain in town and snow up high. So you've got to be patient. Heli skiing in Alaska is not a 2-day or 3-day affair. Like, you should plan on 7 days so that you get the most. You're not going to fly every day. That's a fact of life.
Right. Yeah, sure.
But with 7 days, you're going to get a lot of vertical.
So, I mean, those places, Anchorage and Anchorage region and Valdez, how do you get to Valdez? Is it pretty easy from Anchorage?
You can fly into Valdez, puddle jumper up the coast.
Yeah.
You can drive, but it's a long drive. Not as the crow flies, but as the road goes. So flying in is a good option into Valdez, and convenient. And then the operators meet you right there at the airport.
Let's say you're a skier. You've been skiing on ski holidays for, I don't know, let's say 10 years, maybe 15 years, and you're used to skiing a little bit off piste. You know, you might in Europe, you're skiing on red runs a lot of the time, but you can handle a black run. You do a little bit of off-piste skiing, or you've tried some off-piste skiing. Is that the sort of person that could still say, look, I'm going to go heli skiing in Alaska? Or is that just way beyond their ability level?
I guess the question comes down to, how's your ability in moguls and powder for varying terrain? To me, that's sort of the test for intermediate skiers looking for adventure. You know, if you can ski fall line through a bump line, not a zipper line, not a competition moguls, but if you can find your way down and you're okay with adjusting to terrain, if you can ski powder and link some turns together without stiffening your lower leg, over rotating your upper body, if you can stay on your feet, what you're going to find in heli skiing is that skiing's a lot easier because the pitch of the slope is perfect. The snow is perfect. And once you get used to the idea of skiing in powder, you know, but what's been lost, you know, Rob, in the last couple decades in big mountain skiing is we've overtaught carving. So generally your carvers, people who love the carve, or if they've taken a class on carving, or they're obsessed with the perfect turn, you have a wide platform. You don't have your feet aren't close enough together. So you have a wide platform, you're over edging, you're over pressuring. And that technique doesn't work in powder. So, you know, I think the traditional ski schools are doing us a little bit of a disservice, not focusing on, you know, the platform we need to stand up on our feet in powder. I think if you ski with a Warren Smith or others specialty, you're going to find that they're going to teach a technique that's more applicable to skiing in this terrain. They're going to talk more about your platform. They're going to talk more about deceleration in the fall line, not high edge angles. And that lends itself to powder skiing. So what I say to skiers is, you know, if you're not afraid, if you're willing to risk, you might fall a little bit, but listen, you're going to fall in powder. It doesn't hurt. It's, you know, it's not hard ice. You're not going to skid. You're not going to slide. You might tip over. Stand up and do it again. You know, this is an experience you don't want to miss, because this is the ultimate skiing experience, is skiing in uninterrupted powder. This is the dream. And, you know, when you look at the land map of Alaska for heli skiing options, you know, you have Valdez, right, which has sort of cut its teeth in the early 90s. You have Cordova, right, which is Points North Heli Ski, which is legendary. You've seen it in the Warren Miller films and all that stuff. Great staff, great owner, beautiful lodge, amazing access to the mountains, right? And then you have Haines, Alaska. And up in Haines, you're inland a little bit, so you're not getting that coastal weather. You're getting a little less rain. You're getting, you know, might get some clouds, of course, but you're not getting the wet snowpack. So you might fly a few more days, you know, in those 7 days. And then where we were with Majestic, just two plus hours outside of Anchorage, really the reason why we chose Majestic is their percentage of days are higher than everybody else. They have better weather, better snowpack, more access. And there the copters are parked at the lodge. So when you wake up, you're at the, you know, you're right there. You literally walk 100 yards and load the copter after a great breakfast, you know, like you can't believe it. And that's the dream, right? I mean, here you have these big mountain lodges, you know, made out of, you know, big logs and your own private bird. I mean, it doesn't get any better.
So, I mean, is that a kind of typical setup then? If you're going to go for a week of heli skiing in Alaska, you stay in a lodge like that somewhere that the helicopter is attached to. What take us through a sort of typical day, not necessarily the skiing itself, but, you know, around the skiing, what's the accommodation like? What's the sort of experience like of being there in Alaska? What's the food? What do you do? I mean, that's hard to get a head around if you're used to going, you know, on a ski holiday in somewhere like Val d'Isère or Morzine or St. Anton. You know, we understand how that works. Alaska is a very, very different experience, I guess.
You know, it's still, this is what I love about it. It's a mountain experience, right? Mm-hmm. One, there's no crowds, right? So that alone, you're isolated and is calming. It's relaxing to be in the mountains in a mountain cabin without chairlifts, without shuttle buses, without, you know, buzzing. You know, I of course, everybody knows I love Val d'Isère, right? But in the mornings, you hear the plow trucks. You hear the town wakes up. In Alaska, you don't. It's quiet. It's peaceful. It's restful. You're up. You know, yoga, if you want it, at 7:30 in the morning for stretching and breathing and getting warmed up for the day. 8 o'clock, 8:30, breakfast, a buffet, fruit, you know, eggs, the whole bit, right? Beautiful catered buffet. And you're booted and suited and ready to rumble by 9:30. And depending on the conditions, you're out the door. Most of the operators in Alaska, different from Canada, is in Alaska, they fly small helicopters.
Oh, yeah.
So you're flying in groups of one guide and four clients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One helicopter will service 12 people or three groups, right? And so that's a really nice pace. They take you out in the morning by group. You start skiing in this rotation. You're not waiting around. The bird is there for you. And that morning routine is really nice, right? There's a boot room. Your backpack, your airbag is there. Your avalanche beacons are there. And the guides are there. And they're talking you through the day.
What's a couple of memories, Dan, of skiing, heli skiing in Alaska? You know, maybe recent ones. I don't know. Maybe way back. When was the first time you skied in Alaska?
Yeah, I mean, if you haven't seen the movies, right, go look at AK skiing in the movies, right? It's big, long lines. It's big descents. You know, we're talking 3,000 to 4,000 vertical on an average run, right? That's a lot of skiing. You're talking about uninterrupted powder runs down big, wide open powder slopes. And my memories are always around the helicopter. Like, you're in the bird on a ridge where nobody's been. The helicopter is landing literally on a knife edge. And you're thinking, can we even get out of here? What's it going to be like when I step out the helicopter? Like, I'm going to step onto this ridge and I don't want to fall off it, right? It could be a cornice. Like, it's exciting from that moment on, right? And the guide is guiding you. You step out. Next thing you know, you're in boot to knee deep powder. And you're like, whoa, this is amazing. And then when that bird leaves, Rob, you've unloaded your skis. You've unloaded your backpacks. And that bird takes off above you and peels away down the ridge. You're like in a dream. You're like, did that just happen? Did I witness it? And now you're alone on the mountain with the guide. You're booting up, you're up there on the ridge, and you're wondering, where's this lunatic going to take us? Like, what are we doing up here? those memories are so etched in my mind because every time it reignites this excitement of like, wow, this is not a high traffic spot. This is mine. This is going to be my run, you know? And then you traverse a little bit or you drop in and you're like, holy shimoly, the snow quality is through the roof, you know? And it's not an effort to ski. I mean, when you think about skiing, most of us have a dream of a perfect powder day. Like somewhere in your memory, you're like, today could be my day. Well, in Alaska, every day, every run is your day. Every turn, you just can't believe it. And what that creates is excitement and enjoyment throughout the whole crowd.
I think that's exactly why Alaska is on our bucket list destination, Dan. I mean, do you find that when you're up there with a guide, do you get guides that sort of go, oh, wow, I'm with Dan Egan today. I've got to do something special. Do you get that?
I think, you know, there's always a bit sometimes of that. But you know, really what the guys want to deliver, and I appreciate about the professionalism is an outrageous experience, right? They want to provide the goods. And depending on the level of group we have, they're going to provide that. So what was really cool about this last trip was we had a bunch of 20-year-olds on the group. You know, we had a bunch of people that brought kids that were in their 20s. Okay. And, you know, we had, you know, one, look him up online, Extreme Ryan, who's, you know, a guide and has been to Baffin. He's been to Antarctica. I mean, this guy has been around the globe for a young lad. And he wanted to step out onto it, right? We had a snowboarder that was ready to step out onto it. And the guides delivered for that. Like they got those kids excited, man, you know? And for an old timer like me, you know, I'm like, okay, like I got to keep up with the young bucks, right? Like, so I think they were doing it for the kids, not for me. But on the flip side of that, we had, you know, all ages, right? We had 40s, 50s, 60s, and even a couple of 70-year-olds that were skiing and enjoying this. You know, I think what I like about the Alaskan guiding experience specifically, which is different from Europe, is the communication. There's not an ego involved. So they're very open about where we're going and why and how, what's going to be good and where we should be watching. And that level of communication, I really find comforting.
Yeah, right. And obviously there's a broad range of options for people that want to go to Alaska, to go skiing Alaska. I guess you would probably say if you're going to go all the way to Alaska, you would generally want to go there to heli ski, right? I mean, you know, that's the reason you're going to Alaska, to heli ski. Give us a bit of an idea of, if you can, appreciate I'm just sort of dropping this on you now, but give us an idea of maybe what the cost would be for a week of heli skiing in Alaska in a lodge, if you have an idea of that. And I guess there's a broad range of pricing.
I guess my two cents on that is if you have an addictive personality, get ready to spend your retirement heli skiing because you're going to go every year. It's so mind boggling. It's like, shoot me up, dude. Shoot me up. This is the stuff that gets
Maybe
you.
Maybe that's why I've resisted, Dan. Maybe that's why I've resisted going because I need to survive. I need to get my child through to university.
I know, like you got to be prepared because it's going to be like a mind altering shift in what's possible. But really, you know, listen, heli skiing, when you break it down, is not that expensive as compared to any other location around the world. When you add in your flight, your lodging, you know, it adds up, right? Now, of course, there's packages. But listen, you don't want to dip your toe in the water here. If you're going to go heli skiing for a day, here's what a typical day of heli skiing is if it's only one day. You ski low-level terrain. And you get three or four runs and it gets better throughout the day. The last run's amazing because they want you to come back. Okay. But when you go skelly skiing for 4, 5, 6, 7 days, they don't play those games. You're there on day one, you're going to ski great terrain, right? So what's that look like cost-wise? Heli skiing, all inclusive with your lodge, your lodging, your food, your heli and your guide, you can expect to pay in range of $1,500 to $2,000 a day. Okay.
Yeah.
Some might be lower and some might be higher. That's going to depend on the level of accommodation and the catering, right?
Yeah, right.
But what you're really paying for there is the exclusive experience. I mean, I have clients now that only heli-ski, like literally. They'll take three or four trips a year and it's heli-ski, right? Yeah. What I find with the British market and the European market with, you know, my ski camps is most skiers who are considering it can do it. So I want to encourage you. If you're thinking about heli-skiing, you can heli-ski. If you've taken a one or two courses or skied with other guides off-piste, you're ready to heli-ski.
Yeah, sure.
The whole thing always comes down to investment, right? What you're investing in, and quite literally, I know it's an overused phrase, but a trip of a lifetime. This is the bucket list because it is a trip of a lifetime. And that is the Alaskan experience. That is being in the Arctic. That's being on a glacier without other people. And that is a quality snow experience, which really, even in Europe, for as much as you know, I ski Europe, it's not duplicated every day, right?
Right.
And it's hard to deliver for clients in Europe every day on powder, but in Europe, in Alaska, you can.
So where this trip that you've just been on, Dan, if anyone wants to book that, where do they go?
Yeah, check me out, of course, at skiclinics.com. And we'll be running 2 weeks of heli next year, first 2 weeks in March. Okay. with Majestic heli guides. And you know, there's the US is really getting their act together. There is a US ski, I think it's called the US Heli Association with all the operators. And you know, I haven't flown with a bad operator. All the operators are responsible, all focused on your safety and the avalanche danger, all with experienced guides. You know, I think you have to weigh Alaska against the other heli operations around the world, whether that be Canada or some, of course, in exotic locations. Yeah. And I think when you compare price and value with the experience for what I do for a living, the value's in Alaska. That's where the value's at.
Right. Dan, maybe one day then I'll get, we've skied together, you know, a few times, right? And I've always had a lot of fun. I mean, the thought of getting out of a helicopter on some kind of Alaskan ridge and skiing a huge descent of knee deep, bottomless powder, maybe even all the way down with you sounds quite appealing.
You know, that's Rob, it's like it's a necessity, my friend. And it's, you know, you just got to tell your loved ones, I'll be back. I swear, yes. I'll be back. And don't tell them that what you'll be back to is more heli skiing. Just leave that bit out of the statement.
Right. I'm saving now. There you go. It's my first pound in the piggy bank.
Love it, dude.
Right. Thanks, Dan. A pleasure as always to catch up with you. Great to hear about Alaska. It's fantastic that we've had you coming along to tell us about, you know, the bucket list destination that we've had this week. Sometimes we get to talk about the places that we've been to that are bucket list destinations, but you know, there's no one better to talk about it than you. So thanks very much.
No, I appreciate it. Hey, hope to see everybody out there on the slopes. And like my good friend Warren Miller said, if you don't do it this year, you'll be 1 year older when you do.
Yeah, I said that 10 years ago about skiing in Alaska.
Exactly.
Wow. Cheers, Dan.
Thanks a lot, brother.
Rob, that was a really fantastic interview. Do you know what blew me away the most was this guy who has been skiing for decades in some of the most incredible conditions across the world. And yet the passion and the enthusiasm talking about that trip still is incredible, isn't it? I mean, it's almost like he's never skied before and he's experienced this for the first time, isn't it? It's just, I just find it amazing.
And you know what? He's just like that in real life when you're on a mountain with him as well. first time I skied with Dan a few years ago in Engelberg in Switzerland. And it was the first time I'd been to Engelberg. We were lucky enough to have a guy called Marcus Kasten with us as well, who was a professional free ride skier. Being dragged around the free ride terrain of Engelberg, which is pretty intimidating. But Dan's coaching and enthusiasm just made the whole thing even more fun, than it was. We had some pretty good powder that week as well. I mean, clearly people have limitations. And sometimes I say, Dan, are we really going to ski down that 50 degree down the side of the mountain that goes on for 1,000 meters? And I'm not exaggerating. He just goes, yeah, come on. You are basically. And it's like, okay. All right.
Wow, that is incredible. What a legend and what a location. Alaska sounds every bit as good as I had imagined, doesn't it?
It does. And you know what? The big problem is, Dom, is that after hearing that interview myself or hearing Dan's words makes me want to go there even more.
I know. It's not a cheap ride, is it?
It isn't, but that's what a bucket list trip is all about, right? You might only do that once in your life. Although, of course, as Dad said, that's the plan, right? That's the plan. But after that, you might as well forget about the retirement fund. Just put it all out.
That's it. Three a year. Limit it to 3 a year.
Yeah, it's not a cheap thing to do. And I guess for a lot of keen skiers, it may be something that you think, you know what, I love off-piste skiing. I've been skiing a long time. I'm experienced enough to do this. I'm going to save some money over a 2 or 3 year period and make that trip work. And I think, for any really, really, really keen skier, it's something that you could do. And you don't need to do luxury.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to get to Alaska and you've got to be in a helicopter.
Yeah.
And you need a guide and all of that. So yeah, it's expensive, but hey,
you only live once.
You only heli ski in Alaska once, but not according to Dan.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that was fantastic, Rob. You did a great job of, I know you do a chunk of work with Dan, and it was great to get him on the podcast this week. And to hear about that fantastic destination that is Alaska. Hopefully one day it'll be you or me talking, or you and me talking about that trip. So what have we got next week? We're starting to move into the spring episodes of the Whiteout, where we'll be talking all things summer, biking, hiking, trekking, camping, all that good stuff, which will be exciting times. But before that, I guess I'll have to come back and tell you what Whistler's like at this time of year.
I'm looking forward to hearing about Whistler, Dom. And I know you're heading over there very, very soon. I think next week.
Next week, yep. So off to Seattle and Whistler and Vancouver. So I'm going to do a little bit of city and a little bit of ski, as it's the right time of year for that. Looks like Whistler might have been treated to a chunk of snow before I get there. So fingers crossed that snow sticks around and lets me get a few turns in before the end of this Easter break and the spring skiing finishes up. But it sounds like with great snow out in Teen, there's going to be plenty of people having good Easter holidays out in Europe as well. And Lavinia, I saw, having great, great snow conditions as well.
Yeah, a lot of those resorts are going to have snow all the way through to the end of April at that altitude. And that's great. That's great news. And you know what April's like? It can often bring storms and more snow and powder. So people are talking about that right now in Teen. We think April's going to be pretty decent here. We do need a bit of a good end to the season. And then, of course, summer coming up very quickly. And we are going to start talking about summer in the mountains on the Whiteout podcast.
That's it.
Right. I know we were in Grindelwald last summer together and had a great time there.
Absolutely brilliant.
I love taking the family out to the mountains during the summer, and they love all that sort of activities mixed with the kind of just chilled out nature of being in the mountains in summer. It's a lot less intense than skiing. You don't have the time limitations, so you can kind of chill, whether that's eating in or barbecuing, some holiday, there's lakes. And then if you want the adrenaline stuff, the mountain biking is full on.
Yeah.
And e-biking, a little bit softer. That's what I would recommend.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, love it. Love the mountains in summer.
That's a good name. Love the mountains, Rob. I like that. Very good. So great to hear from Dan Egan. Great to be talking spring, summer. And listeners, don't forget to leave us a review, subscribe to the podcast, go and watch us on the YouTube channel if you want to see what Rob and I are sporting this week. Don't know what I'm sporting this week. I haven't got my sunglasses.
I know what you are.
And that's it, Rob. So next week I'll be in sunny Whistler, or snowy Whistler, let's hope. We will catch up then. But thank you for bringing Dan Egan on the podcast today. And have a great week.
You too. Enjoy Whistler, Dom. Looking forward to hearing about that.
Cheers, Rob. Adios. Have a good week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Mais non, talkie-walkie.
I'm pretty sure it's called a walkie-talkie, mate.